Hello and welcome to the Albion Obsessed. What a few days it has been, Brighton and Hove Albion fans, and we're here to talk to you all about what's happened. But before we get into the details about all those things, let's see who we've got on the show today. We welcome Joe. Joe, my friend, how are you doing?
Yeah, I couldn't be happier, Tom. You know, what, as you say, what a few days it's been. And what a way to top it off with a fantastic win this weekend, and to celebrate these wonderful new players coming to the club, and a lovely new Europa League shirt, which we'll talk more detail about. But wow, what a few days to be a Brighton fan.
Yeah, a certain trifecta of awesomeness. And that trifecta, Dagan, how has it got you feeling on this lovely Sunday?
Tom, it was just great to be able to listen and watch the longtime fans enjoy everything that happened over the past few days. You know, again, my expectations have come into this pretty high, and I've gotten used to this new Brighton and having new expectations for the club and believing all of the best things. Even I don't think I would have figured we would be bringing on a player on loan who was wearing the number 10 shirt from Barcelona. I don't think I would have had that on my dance card. Or bingo card, as it were. I'm excited. The result this weekend was obviously the desirable cherry on top to put an extra bounce in my step. So I'm feeling good going into this international break.
I'm glad to hear that. And we also welcome back Curtis. Curtis, tell me about your Sunday.
My Sunday was quite good. No, it's good. It's good. I'm happy. Nice relaxed day. Coming off a fantastic victory yesterday. Just for the viewers at home, there's nothing lewd on behind me. It's just Poirot. We were worried about copyright. But I'm just happy to be here with you guys. It seems like it's been a while, so I'm glad I could get on tonight.
Yeah, and let's certainly hope we don't get copyright, because I've used a Hot Fuzz reference and there's a Poirot in the background. Now, before we get into the actual game analysis, which I suppose is what we're all here to do, we can't not talk about what's gone on the last couple of days. Dagan, you alluded to it yourself. I mean, the first big thing that happened on Friday was the Europa League draw, which saw Brighton and Hove Albion. I mean, one, we're in the Europa League draw. That in and of itself is just incredible. And then we were drawn in Group B alongside European giants Ajax, Marseille and AEK Athens. I mean, Dagan, It was a fantastic way to start our Friday, was it not?
Oh, it was tremendous. I who am not traveling to the games probably would have liked to see at least, you know, one or two opponents, maybe not quite of that stature, but it's exciting to play teams of that stature and sort of see how we measure up. I think we'll acquit ourselves well, but it's going to be, you know, the schedule is going to be packed. It's going to be difficult. But yeah, it feels right. It feels right for me for us to be mentioned among these teams. And I'm eager to see how we stack up in the games themselves. But a proud early moment in my Brighton tenure as a fan. But I can't imagine for folks who've been fans for 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years to see this moment. And yeah, to call myself a fan among those fans is an honor. And again, seeing others' excitement and knowing how much it means has really been special for me.
Yeah, I was talking to my dad about this, and my dad obviously grew up in the 70s. Johan Cruyff, you know, Ajax were just this massive team, and we said about the prospect of Pascal Gross doing a Cruyff turn at the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam is just incredible. I am so here for it. I mean, I don't want to do Marseille and Athens a disservice, but Ajax, the European pedigree that come with that team is incredible. If you can't tell already, that's the game I'm most excited for. But Curtis, the excitement didn't end, because as Dagan's already alluded to when he was talking about how he was doing, Brighton made a pretty spectacular loan signing Ansu Fati from Barcelona, the man who took the number 10 jersey off of Lionel Messi. How do you compute this signing, Curtis? Because yes, it is a loan signing, and a lot of opposition fans are like, oh, but it's just a loan. It's a big deal, Curtis. Do you think?
I mean, huge, huge. He's so young with oodles of potential. I cannot wait to see him play. And it fully probably won't fully feel real to me until I see him in the shirt out on the pitch. Because I remember the initial links, I thought, I was like, no way, this can't be true. This is obviously one of the many hopeful fake ones that we see around a transfer window. But it materialised. Didn't see that coming at all. And I'm just so excited for the prospect of seeing him in a blue and white shirt on the pitch. And we have him for a whole year on probably one of our most important years in the club's history. So exciting.
Yeah, it really is. And as you say, it almost seemed to come out of nowhere because obviously Spurs were heavily linked with him. There were tenuous links to Chelsea as well. But it's funny, isn't it, that when money isn't an issue, maybe it's something else. But no, a really exciting loan signing. And he was shown off to the fans ahead of kickoff on Saturday evening. But Joe, the fun of Friday didn't stop there. And I've come to you on purpose for this one. No surprises there. The club released a special edition Europa League shirt. Joe, it looks pretty good, doesn't it?
I mean, the rumours were a boring Nike template. And I think we've sort of come to expect that from Nike. Somebody found said template before it was released, and I think people were rather underwhelmed. But we have a bespoke design on a Nike shirt for the first time. They've actually done something different with our badge. I know they normally do like the monochrome sort of thing with our badge sometimes, but they've actually, yeah, like Tom's got. But they've actually put detail onto the badge. The Nike tick looks different to what we've seen as well. And like, if you're not a shirt nerd, just turn off now, because I am in love with it. I think it's absolutely beautiful. I love the fact that the club have put this thought into having something so special for us fans to get our hands on and to celebrate what a fantastic year, what looks to be a fantastic year for us anyway. Obviously, I don't know what's going to happen, but imagine if we go on to have like the best year possible and we get as far as maybe the final or the semi-finals or whatever, and then we've got this to look back on. I know, Dagan, you're going to say yes, win it, but
outcome is we right now are the second favorite.
I'm a pessimistic Brighton fan. I'm going to say let's at least limit it to the semi-finals.
I still can't believe it.
Just to have this shirt with a Europa League badge on it, especially for the Europa League as well, it still blows my mind. Tom, I was sat here with the Europa League badge on my home shirt, and I just keep staring at it. And I was at the Amex for the event on Friday, and the feeling around the club was just so special. Like, it was my daughter's first time to the Amex as well, not for a game, but she got to see, you know, where I go and have these fantastic experiences, and hopefully she can join me for that one day. And just to have her as part of that history as well is something I'm going to remember forever. Funny that as our name was being pulled out of the hat, she was throwing a paddy, but you expect a two-year-old to throw a paddy at that exact moment. But, you know, it didn't take away from what a special time it was to see us pulled out alongside Ajax, Marseille, Athens as well. We're Athens away on my birthday. Unluckily, I can't go. But, you know, what a special day that would be if I could get to Athens on my birthday. It's just been an absolute mad, you know, sort of 72 hours. We had Paul Barber on a live Zoom call after the European draw as well, all the way from Monaco. And 3 minutes before Ansu Fati was announced, he announced it to us live from Monaco. So we found out sort of that it was a fully done deal before anyone else, which was incredibly special to be part of that. And it's just, yeah, you know, you guys have said it. It's just such an incredibly special time to be a Brighton Hove Albion fan, and you know what amazing nights we have ahead. Even if we come third in the group, I know Dagan, you're going to say, "Oh, he's pessimistic," but you know, even if we come third in the group, we drop down into the Europa Conference League, and we still have that to look forward to. I wouldn't have cared if we got Conference League last season. Any European competition is absolutely massive for this football club and where it's come from. So yeah, to have all of these things happen is just unbelievably special. So to have a physical item to represent that, you couldn't ask for more.
No, you certainly couldn't. And talking of shirts, it seems a nice time to let you guys know that we are now affiliated with football shirt seller One Klopp Shop, which means if you order through the oneklopshop.com, which we will link in the description down below, and if you enter the code ALBIONOBSESSED, all one word, all uppercase, you will get 10% off your order. So there are new drops every month. So go and grab yourself some awesome football shirt.
Tom,
swag.
Did you just say 10% off?
I said 10% off. Wow. Purchase. Not amazing. One, not five, 10%. So go and grab yourself a bargain.
In this economy, that's fantastic.
It is. And you can be football shirt nerds like myself and Joseph. With that being said, though, we do actually have to talk about a game. I'm sure we could sit here and talk about the European nights all night, as it were. But we do have to talk about the game that happened at the weekend against Newcastle United, a team that we drew with last season at home, and then we got battered by at St James's Park. So, yeah, tough one. Of course, this has come off the back of a not-so-pleasant loss to West Ham. So let's start with the starting 11 then, shall we? Because we did see quite a lot of change. Joe, I'm going to come to you up on this one first. We saw Veltman, Van Hecker and João Pedro come into the starting 11 at the expense of Milner. And, of course, the injured Welbeck and as well Webster. So what did you make of those changes, Joe? Do you think they were needed, considering how, I would say, convincing, let's be honest, convincingly West Ham sliced through us last week?
Yeah, I think the changes were needed. Obviously, Adam Webster being at fault for quite a few of the goals and the chances that were conceded last weekend, I think you can't expect to keep your place. And I think out of anyone, it was going to be Van Hecke to come in, given the pre-season he had and the end of last season he had as well. I thought he was excellent and is more than deserving of some chances this season for sure. And my word, he took it. Obviously, we'll go into more detail a little bit later. And obviously, we've been screaming for balance in this side at the moment. It was clear to see that it was unbalanced against West Ham. And to have Joel Veltman come in and play it right back, you know what you're going to get every single time from that guy. He gives you such a professional performance. And I thought he was absolutely flawless yesterday. And it's, you know, if he's going to go put in performances like that week in, week out, a right back, more than happy to have him there. We've been screaming for a right back signing. It hasn't happened. So we have to make do with what we've got. And if you're forcing me to make do with Joel Veltman, absolutely fine. Not a problem. And João Pedro coming into the side as well. He's been fantastic the time we've had him here. And looks to be improving game in, game out. Whenever he comes on, whenever he's got minutes, he looks a threat, and done such a stellar job of sort of filling in that sort of number 10 role yesterday. So yeah, it was great to see those guys get a chance, and I thought it was a perfect team selection from De Zerbi right from the start before the game had even kicked off. I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I want to see.
Dagan, do you agree with Joe's assessment that it was perhaps more balanced? I mean, we've talked about right back quite a lot, you and I, and, you know, Veltman seems to be the more, I suppose, dependable option in terms of defensive capabilities, at least. Did you think that Veltman's presence there would give us more stability at the back?
1,000%. 100%. But I need to exaggerate here. You know, I said, making a 1-3 loss prediction, which would have been our first consecutive Premier League loss under De Zerbi, had we lost, but we haven't. So we haven't yet lost twice in a row under De Zerbi. But I said, if we don't change the lineup, right? And what we did do was get Welbeck out of the starting lineup. Now, I understand he had a knock, so we didn't have a choice there. But the Ferguson-Pedro duo was what I wanted more than anything, because they're both so dangerous, and I just think they're tough to account for together. As we've said before, I don't have a huge worry with Gross in the midfield if he's not paired with Milner. And seeing Milner not in the starting lineup also was pleasing to me, given that Gross was. And then finally, Van Hekke, who just has a better ability to turn and run than Adam Webster. And that really shone through. His mobility, and I think he's decisive for better or worse, right? Sometimes he may make a rash decision. He's young. But I think sometimes what he does do is make the decision quickly and aggressively. And he broke up some really dangerous plays. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But, you know, last week I was really critical of our starting lineup. This week, when the team sheet came out, not just a result-based response, I felt like Roberto De Zerbi got it 100% correct, as Joe said. And I was really pleased with that lineup. I have to add a note before we skip too far forward. Not in the starting lineup, obviously, are Carlos Baleba, who we didn't touch on, a terrific signing who I'm really excited about, Ansu Fati, who both got to watch the game. I have to note this, because I know there won't be an occasion later. Watching them walk out together, arm in arm, De Zerbi throwing an arm around one, Welbeck throwing an arm around De Zerbi after the game. Both those guys are listed at 5'10". Caicedo is listed at 5'10". Baleba is at least 3, if not 4 inches taller than Ansu Fati. De Zerbi's listed at 5'9", and they looked like they were pretty even height. Welbeck's listed at 6'1". I think he's probably closer to 6 foot. He was taller, but I think Baleba is closer to 6 foot or 6'1" than he is to 5'10". This kid is an athlete, and I know we're not on the subject of that, but he didn't start yet. But I think it's safe to imagine that at some point he will, and he's impressive. Ansu Fati is impressive. And for all the accolades we're going to give to the guys who did play in this game, it is exciting to think about some of the guys who later will need to play in these games for us and where they can slot in. The options at De Zerbi's disposal are tremendous. And that's really, 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 really exciting. I know we could make a lot of no left back signing, no right back signing, but we do have a lot of options in the squad. And it was fun to see them on display and all clicking together this week.
You know what? Say what you want about our podcast, but you're never going to get a breakdown on players' heights like that. So well done, Tegan. Well done. I like that.
And that's why you should subscribe to the Albion Obsessed podcast, people.
Smash the like button, elbow drop the subscribe button, and keep it real. Less of that and more of the next bit. But you do raise a very good point, Dagan, because when everyone is fit and fully firing, that's a selection headache that you want your coach to have when you've got that sort of skill at your disposal. But we will talk a bit more on that later. It's always easier to talk about that sort of situation after, or harder as it were, after a win, because you think, oh, how could you possibly drop so-and-so because they had such a good game? But more on that later. Curtis, really quickly then, starting 11, João Pedro returning to the starting lineup since the opening game against Luton. How pleased were you with his inclusion, and in general, how pleased were you with the starting 11?
Yeah, I mean, I was excited to see João Pedro get like another start, because I thought he'd be raring and up for it, and he was so impressive yesterday. And I know people point at the fact that, you know, he might not have scored goals, but he was a right menace yesterday, and he was really, really good. But I was really, really pleased, because I too thought, as Dagan did, that, you know, we needed to refresh things out there. It was looking a little, not stale, I guess that's not the right word to use, but a little lethargic in areas. So I thought it was good to change things up, definitely in the defensive areas. So I was ecstatic to see Van Hekke start, because I'm a big fan of his. And again, he was outstanding. He was great.
Yeah, you're spot on, Curtis. A fantastic performance from the young Dutchman there. Let's, before we even get into the ball being kicked, we have to talk about the fact that Newcastle were at it from the off with the mind games, because Newcastle won the toss and they flipped it around. So the Albion were attacking the north stand in the first half, which doesn't happen particularly often, but I remember it happening last year. I think it might have been against Everton, maybe. happy to be corrected. Let me know. Joe shaking his head. I'm pretty sure we lost the game, though. I'm pretty sure whichever game it was where it was flipped over, we lost. We do like to attack the North in the second half. So already, Joe, from the off, you know, Newcastle playing their mind games. And for the opening 5-10 minutes, Joe, I think it's fair to say that it was a tough start for us. You know, Newcastle, similar to how they played at St. James's Park, really aggressive press, closing us down, especially Purvis out on the left, seemingly wanting to push the play over to our right-hand side. What did you make of those early exchanges?
I think it was clear to see where Newcastle had studied and thought that they could hurt us, or maybe studied and thought where our strengths were, because they seemed to be sort of not even doubling, but tripling up on Estupiñán and sort of leaving, well, it looked like we were leaving him isolated to deal with three guys who were running through and are very dangerous players. You know, we can't forget that Newcastle's, you know, they're a Champions League side. And by merit, they were very, very good last season and have got very dangerous players in their side. So they were always going to start brightly, especially given that they lost last weekend. They want a reaction. So I think it was very important for us to ride that wave. And I think the balance of the team and the balance of the back line helped us in riding that wave. And obviously it could go either way. Newcastle sneak a goal in and then we're talking about a completely different situation, but that isn't the case. And we rode the wave and grew into the game. And luckily we've got a master tactician in Roberto De Zerbi who must have tweaked a few things here and there. And then we suddenly see us in the ascendance. And you're right. Obviously Newcastle have Eddie Howe who loves to play a mind game. And you're not smiling now, are you, Smug Eddie?
Oh, Smug Eddie. But Curtis, Joe makes a really good point. In those early exchanges, Newcastle were pretty much in the ascendancy. And Dunk especially looked quite uncomfortable with Isaac. You know, he looked a real threat going forward. And it was, in a positive way, albeit slightly strange to see Van Hecker look the more composed out of the two. I mean, Dagan, you mentioned in our group chat about, you know, him putting in some really fine recovery tackles and making those decisions. So, Curtis, how confident were you that our back line could keep Newcastle at bay?
I mean, coming into this, I thought it would be a really, really tricky game because they like to be quite aggressive and they like to push. So I thought that we were going to have a really hard time of it. So those first sort of opening 5 to 10 minutes, I was a bit like, oh, okay. But that's why I was so impressed to see Van Hecke really step up to the plate when Dunkey was, as you say, struggling a little bit out there. So yeah, it was good to just see them backing each other, you know, working so well with each other and whatnot. So really, really impressive, really impressive.
Yeah, there was actually, you talk about backing each other, because I think that's what we definitely got with Veltman at the back.
It reminded me a bit of like the old sort of Duffy Dunk times. Do you remember how those two were at one point, how gelled together they were? That's sort of what it reminded me of.
And it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, Dunk and Van Hecker, they don't have the greatest minutes together, but they looked quite assured together. And there was a really nice moment that Dagan, again, you linked it in our group chat to, with Veltman getting back to support, you know, Juan Van Hecker, which we weren't necessarily seeing in the previous games with Milner at right back. And obviously there's a debate to be had there about what Milner might give you going forward as opposed to Veltman. But, you know, in those early exchanges, Dagan, Veltman was really important to give us that stability.
Yeah, I mean, Isak loves to roll out wide to the left-hand side, even when he is playing striker. He'll swing out there during transition, which he did on one occasion, and that was the occasion that I had mentioned, where Van Hecke, he greeted him further out than what Webster did in the same situation on the second goal last week. And then Veltman quickly came in, which allowed Van Hecke to slide and protect sort of the end line. And Van Hecke, I mean, then Veltman slid in and became the primary, you know, sort of coverage, and Van Hecke dropped back. And that's the exchange you hope to see in that situation, that, you know, that center back can slide out, show, and the right back is then going to fill that space in, which Veltman was intent to do, and it wasn't a huge gap of time, because Isak, I think he's he's formidable in all spaces, and he had a couple of chances yesterday that could have ruined us had he converted, especially the one that Almiron made the nice run and played the ball into him, and he just, you know, bashed it wide by quite a margin. That one, when the ball came through the middle, I let out an audible, like, I thought for sure that was going to be in the back of the net. Isak is a player I admire a lot among the strikers in the Premier League. I've been excited to see him do.
Trust me, Dagan, when you see that ball played across and you're sat in the north stand and you're down the other end, you're just expecting it to hit the back of the net, especially when you've got the quality of Isak in the middle. The relief when it goes wide.
Yeah.
Can't tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right. Score first. And then we'll talk about it, but
we certainly will.
For me,
there were scary moments with that counter press really hurt us. It looked like Hal told them, let's punch them in the mouth in the first 10 minutes and the game will be over. And they just couldn't quite get that goal they needed. And then once we settled in the game, we were in control. Curtis, what were you going to say?
I mean, in regards to the defensive display yesterday, I thought it was also impressive to see so many other players really chipping in. I saw like Matoma making clearances from back there, and he was everywhere yesterday, absolutely everywhere. He really impressed me. So just to see everyone, again, backing each other up, it was fantastic. So great.
A fantastic team performance, really.
I was trying to find this. Do you guys remember in the World Cup, didn't Matoma play fullback at some point in the World Cup?
Definitely play wing back. I don't think he played fullback.
But. He played wing back for Union Saint-Gilloise at times as well in his time over there. So it's a somewhat familiar position for him. And I think that was really important because, as we said, you know, in the first opening exchange, they were putting a lot of pressure on Purvis. So to have Mitoma doing those defensive duties was really important. And I'm going to stick with you on this one, Dagan, because I know you wanted to talk about Bart. There was a few times where the ball distribution from Verbruggen was a bit iffy to start with. And this is what I said to you guys before coming on air. My first note about Bart's performance was about having two sloppy passes out to Purvis, who they were slightly off ground. So by the time Purvis had controlled the ball, three Newcastle players were already on him. And my first question about Bart was a sign that perhaps he's not quite yet up to speed with the Zerbi ball. Imagine how foolish I felt a bit later on. But Dagan, you wanted to talk about Bart. How did you feel he performed in those opening exchanges where there was a lot of pressure?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't make any huge mistakes, right? And I think it's easy in a moment like that, especially coming off a loss like we just had, especially with the oohs and ahs and shouts of terror from the crowd as he's, you know, peeling passes through a rabid set of on rushing, you know, pressuring Newcastle players. I thought he settled into the game well. His sort of lofted passes over the first line just sort of unlock things. He just has such a feel. And then the save that he made off the deflection, that save, now other side of the pitch, but I talked about last week, I just rewatched some of that Everton game. The goal that McNeil scored on the left side that squeaked past Steele on the near post was almost a mirror image of that shot. And Steele didn't even move. He didn't even move to get to that ball. Verbruggen got down and cleared it, you know, out with somewhat ease, despite, you know, that deflection that was considerable. His reflex saves are fantastic. I watched him a lot last year once, you know, well, really, especially this summer as he was playing in the U21s for the Netherlands. His reflexes are astounding. And that's a real strength for Steele. But what he brings you is those reflexes in a 6'4 frame. And obviously the upside of being a 20-year-old or 21-year-old. I thought he was tremendous. I thought his distribution after those first two shaky balls, you know, were great. Was great. He I couldn't be more excited. I think Steele still is very much a part of, you know, the goalkeeping rotation. I don't think he's wrestled that job away from him through these performances. I think they'll still share time. I don't have any worry that he can handle the job. And I can't imagine that anyone should have worry about his ability to handle the job at this level. He is a Premier League ready goalkeeper, especially in our system.
Can I add to that, Tom, how commanding he was from set pieces as well? I thought he claimed a lot of really important balls in that could have really hurt us. Newcastle, a big side as well. Really big side, and he had to be commanding. Like, there were so many bodies around him on so many corners, and it didn't faze him. He was clearing those bodies out, and the main aim was to catch that ball and to hold that ball as close to his body as possible. And I thought that was really impressive to see how he just took ownership of the job that he had to do.
Yeah,
he had my brother said to me yesterday, he turned to me at one point and said, Bart might as well pull up a lawn chair. He's not doing that. Didn't have to do that much in this game. Like after we got over that initial, you know, onslaught, and he was right.
He was. I mean, my initial point there about his passes was, again, in the first 10 minutes, and before people start piling on me about another controversial opinion, second week in a row.
The Verbruggen conundrum.
The Verbruggen conundrum. he had a fantastic game. And before we move on, we cannot not talk about the second half when Anthony Gordon's rushing onto him and he just does the sweetest of little turns. I mean, I imagine the North Stand had their heart in their mouths when that happened. But my God, it was so good to see. 10 out of 10, that for me. It shows a lot of confidence. You know, you don't do that if you're not feeling confident. And I know Dagan, you talk about him and Steele sharing the number one, but I don't think it'll be long before we see Verbruggen command that number one position for his own.
That's fair. I was going to say, Joe, right? I mean, your point about him claiming those crosses and his command of the box, I really feel like he brings the best of Steele in his distribution and the best of Sanchez in his, you know, ability to sort of go up high and win the ball amidst traffic. And the thing that I think
he brings, not drop it.
And he brings the leadership. I mean, to your point, Joe, yesterday, he did not seem afraid at all to, you know, in any situation, command the people in front of him. And that's just striking for his age.
It is. You wouldn't know. He's only, what, 21? Big future ahead of this lad. You'd be forgiven if, for the first part of this podcast, we'd been talking all about Newcastle's attack, which lasted about 10 minutes. After that, it was pretty much one-way traffic. I don't think it's a discredit to us or to Newcastle to say that Brighton absolutely ran that game from those points out. Brighton quickly gained momentum after those initial hairy moments, with March firing over, João Pedro heading wide. Ferguson had a shot that was saved by Pope. But the goal, Ferguson's first goal, all starts from that man, Nick Pope, who at the Amex last season is the only reason that Newcastle walked away with a point. It's funny how times have changed, because a year later, some awful distribution from Pope. He finds Purvis, who shows, I don't know if it was a great bit of pace or I don't know what it was, but the way that Newcastle player just seemed to, in a sliding doors moment, he beats his man. He plays in Matoma, whose shot is well saved by Pope, admittedly. And then it's a half-hearted clearance, which falls to Billy Gilmore. Now, before we talk about the goal, I've got to say this. Billy Gilmore put in a midfield masterclass yesterday. Superb. Absolutely superb. And we will talk about more of him later. His fierce shot was then spilled by Pope with a half-hearted... and then who's there to tuck it in? Evan Ferguson. I mean, Joe, before we talk about the goal, we've got to talk about that fierce shot from Gilmore. He's got to score soon, surely. He's had a couple of chances now. It's so close for the young man. I desperately want him to score because he deserves it.
Yeah, first of all, just want to point out Estupiñán as well. The power that guy possesses in how he accelerates and how he installs fear into so many back lines as a left back is absolutely stunning. And I love watching that guy play. Yeah, great that Gilmore had the opportunity to absolutely thunder bastard the ball into the top right corner. And then Popey's obviously decided that he's got butter on his fingers. But Billy Gilmore, yeah, he's got to score soon. The first chance I think he had, obviously when he came into the team last season against Wolves, he almost scored in that home game and run a masterclass there, and is easily becoming one of the best midfielders at this football club, easily. And the tenacity to get into that position and to launch that shot and just have not exactly a hit and hope, because I think that's like a hopeless phrase, but just to buy a ticket almost and try and win that lottery. And if you don't have that shot, Ferguson doesn't get that goal. So it all comes from him. Similar a little bit to the way that he won the ball back for the second goal, which we'll go into a little bit more. But
somewhere Todd Bowley is going, who's this Billy Gilmore kid?
Literally. And where did Brighton sign him from? Don't know. But yeah, absolutely wonderful from Billy. And it started the perfect afternoon for big Evan.
Yeah, it's just Dagan, striker's instinct to be in the right place at the right time. I don't think in that whole passage of play, Evan Ferguson moves pretty much anywhere outside the 18-yard box. He's just there. And, you could forgive him for moving as the play dropped to Gilmore, dropping a little bit deeper, but he doesn't. He stays in and around the goalkeeper, which means he's perfectly placed. A really mature head on young shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, you listen to pundits and they talk about the sky's the limit for this kid. And I think it's because he possesses so many attributes of so many different types of great strikers, right? I mean, he has sort of these poaching instincts, but he has, the ball striking away from goal of, one of these, Enciso like, number 10s that can, just blast shots from anywhere. He doesn't need to be right in front of the goal. And so what is he? And he's just a versatile talent. He can drop deep and use his body and receive the ball. I mean, just couldn't be happier to see him get a start in a big moment. If that doesn't solve the riddle of who's our number one striker, I don't know what will. But gosh knows if Welbeck is still somehow seen as the first option, I'm at a loss. That's for sure.
Curtis, it was the goal our play very much deserved. I mean, towards the end, Newcastle couldn't handle Brighton in our attacking. You spoke about João Pedro earlier, causing them so many problems. Billy Gilmore was causing them problems, Purvis, Matoma. But it was young Evan Ferguson, as we say, got on the score sheet and gave Brighton the goal that they richly deserved.
I'm going to play him down because I don't want him to be sold. I thought he looked terrible yesterday. I wouldn't go anywhere near him. It was a fluke. Chelsea, leave him alone. But seriously, no, I mean, I've run out of good things to say about him at this point. Yesterday, it just showed that true striker thing, that just thing that you either have or you don't. Like that quick second thinking off of that deflection off of Pope just to get that in is outstanding stuff. And those other two goals, like, because I saw him in the post game, he said he realized he had a lot more time on his shots than he thought. And because I think that we tend to maybe overplay quite a bit when we reach the final third, and because it reminded me of at West Ham where Gross scored that goal because he just went for it. That's what Ferguson was doing. He just saw the opportunity and he went for it. And I was so happy he did because, those two fantastic goals from him. But going back a little bit, we have to talk about Billy Clifford Gilmore. What a guy. What a fantastic player. So much of the game came through him and he absolutely bossed it. It was so hard to choose a man of the match. in that game, but he was definitely up there for one of my men of the match.
I would be
Curtis. I just had to fact check that his full name is actually Billy Clifford Gilmore. That is fantastic.
Well,
I did not know that either.
Joe, I don't play around. All right.
I love
He's
it. Yeah,
really the big red dog, as far as I'm concerned.
No, Billy Clifford Gilmore. Yeah, what a player he is becoming for Brighton. Just as a side note, I am genuinely thinking of getting him on my Europa shirt. It's just the fact that he's 11 and a centre midfielder that makes me kind of go, but yeah, less about my shirt nerdiness, the better, really.
He can wear whatever number he bloody likes.
I know. Well, if he keeps putting in these performances, yes, he bloody well can. Curtis said, Joe, that he had run out of nice things to say about Evan. I hope not, because we've got two more goals to talk about. Let's talk about the second one. Once again, Billy Gilmore at the heart of the action. And I think this one, I was really impressed, actually, because I don't know if it was a heavy touch or what it was, or a slip. But to get the ball from Dunk, he takes a touch, then seems to like slip, but he still manages to pass the ball to Evan Ferguson. And as Dagan says, and as Curtis said, Ferguson drops deep. He's realised he's got plenty of time. The Newcastle defence, thanks Dan Burn, by the way, they give him the freedom of the pitch to turn, to pick his shot and to hit it. That's, 20 yards out? Phenomenal goal, because it wasn't a thunder bastard, this one. This was a side foot, well-placed goal. Lovely finish.
It's one of the best finishes you're going to see this season. It was absolutely exquisite. Aaron, if you're watching this, I don't care what you say about Nick Pope's positioning, to get that ball out of your feet and to bend it 25 yards out perfectly into that far corner is world class. Evan Ferguson yesterday, not just his goals, but how he linked up play, how he was dropping deep, his work rate was just unbelievable. And it's what you expect from Harry Kane when he's on his best game. It's exact, like, he really, really reminds me of like a prime Harry Kane, and he's only going to get better. 18 years old, and he's got the audacity to play like this in the Premier League against a Champions League side who have just drawn PSG, Milan and Dortmund in their group. Like, they're not, honestly, I think, except for Mbappe, they're not going to come up against tougher strikers than Evan Ferguson, because that guy, the sky is the limit. Like, that's such a cliche phrase, I know, but the pundits are saying it. Everyone's talking about him. The disrespect has happened already. How much are Brighton going to sell him for? Zombie, who's been on this podcast before, he said, change that to how many goals is he going to score for Brighton? When will he become their record goal scorer? Because if he stays with us, there is no doubt in my mind that he becomes our club record goal scorer, not just our Premier League record scorer, club.
I don't know about that, Joe. You've got to remember the club record goal scorer was made during wartime, so it's like an obscene amount of goals, but I get what you mean.
Post-war club record scorer then.
sorry to be that finicky guy.
I just want to weigh in there, though. I want to weigh in there because a really interesting thing has happened in the punditry that didn't happen this time last year. Every time our players had success last year, it was always singularly, you know, where are they going to go? When are they going to go? Who's coming for them? And now the pundits, some of them are still asking that question. Will Tottenham go in for him? Will Manchester United go in for Evan Ferguson? How much will they spend? But there are others who are saying, Evan Ferguson is in exactly the right place. He'll go when he needs to go in due time, perhaps, but he's nowhere near that time. Brighton is exactly the right place to nurture his talent. He's getting the minutes, he's getting the touches, he's getting the opportunities to be successful. He should stay exactly right where he is. And that wasn't something we were hearing about our players a year ago. And I think you fast forward a year to who we're going to be in the perception. And I'm beginning to wonder, will pundits start saying, why would any player want to leave Brighton? assuming we can meet their wages, which will be a challenge. But we've outlaid some money for 1 year to pay Ansu Fati. So if we secure the new target, and as Deserbi said, Ansu Fati is here to help us reach a new target. If we do, just pause.
Who invited these bloody optimistic Americans, honestly? Dagan, you got me so excited again. Honestly, you just keep pumping this positivity and I'm like, blooming it. This club, we're winning it all.
But Dagan is right. It was really refreshing. I think it was Jamie Redknapp in the punditry. You know, he said exactly, he's exactly where he needs to be. And it's also worth noting that Evan Ferguson turned down Liverpool, and I think there was another big six club in the offing as well when he decided to come to Brighton. So I think he's made it plainly clear that he values his playing time and his pathway over money. So I think he's got a huge, huge future. I think, as everyone does, if he can stay injury free, he's going to be an absolute monster. It is worth noting that going two up, Gordon really should have scored. Joe, I think your exact response in the group chat at the time was just a lot of laughing. In the north stand, Joe, when you saw Gordon rushing onto that, but slotting wide from 12 yards, how did it make you feel?
I don't actually remember it, Tom. Genuinely, you know, don't remember it. No, I don't. I think
it was pretty much Newcastle's only chance of the second half, bar Callum Wilson goal.
So that would have been coming towards the north stand, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And at the time,
I don't remember it. I think I was too busy celebrating the fact that we were absolutely running Newcastle off the park. So
we certainly were. Let's talk less about that. I was just going to offer you the opportunity to laugh at him again. But instead, I'm going to make Curtis say more nice things about Ferguson, because Ferguson wasn't done yet. Gilmore, once again, at the heart of it, who gets it to Mitoma, who sets in Evan Ferguson, who's shot on target, which is why it was given to him. It clips Shah in what is perhaps some of the laziest bit of defending you're going to see. Really awful defending. Don't want to take it away from Ferguson, but God, if a Brighton player had done that, I'd be fuming. It wrong foots Pope, and Evan Ferguson gets his first top flight hat trick. A top flight hat trick, by the way, which is the first home hat trick a Brighton and Hove Albion player has scored in the top level. Yes, we've seen away hat tricks, Trossard against Liverpool last year, but at home, the first one to do it. Curtis, a huge accolade for the young man.
Absolutely. Just so impressive for him. And I'm so unbelievably happy that, because I was worried that he'd get taken off before, because I could see the potential of a hat trick coming. So I thought, oh, just leave him on. Please leave him on. I'm glad that they did. But again, Billy Cliffardinho Gilmore. What can I say? Assisting that again. But again, just fantastic team play yesterday to set up that beautiful, beautiful goal. And yeah, it just topped off, again, an amazing team performance. So I'm really, really pleased for him and for us.
Yeah. And also, anyone in the... you guys should know, because I've already told you who it was. But I'm going to give the viewers and listeners at home a little question. When Evan Ferguson scored that third goal, he became the youngest Premier League hat-trick scorer since someone back in October 1998, which is why that shirt's behind me. Who was that someone? I'm going to give you, well, as long as you need, you can pause the podcast if you wish, but I'm going to give you a few seconds of thinking time.
Was it A, Anne Widdecombe, B, Chris Tarrant,
B, Robbie Fowler, or C, Michael Owen? It was Michael Owen in October 1998. So if you were playing along with us there, yeah, he's the youngest Premier League hat-trick scorer since Michael Owen back in 1998. The last time a player of his age scored a hat-trick in the Premier League, Brighton and Hove Albion were wearing that shirt and were playing in Gillingham. So there you go. Bit of a history lesson for you there.
So, are you watching, Graham? Are you watching?
See, now it's Tom coming out with the stats. Dagan, you got to up your game. Up your game.
You know, well, I used to be the stat guy before Dagan joined us. Then Dagan took that job away from me. But, it's, you know, Dagan knows far more about stats than me, so it's fine. Let's talk really quickly about the return of a player who had a bit of an exciting cameo at the end of the game. And that was one Tarik Lamptey, Joe, who came on for his first Premier League appearance since sustaining knee damage against West Ham in March. How good was it to see young Tarik return?
First of all, it was so wholesome seeing him warm up on the sidelines. And before it even come on, it was, there's a star man running down the right. His name is Tarik Lamptey and he's in dynamite. And I was just so happy to see him back. And when you see him getting prepped to come on, it's like, yeah, this is going to be fun. Because whenever Tarik Lamptey comes off the bench, it's explosive, it's dynamic, it's everything you love about Tarik Lamptey. I think he's lost a little bit of the confidence to take people on, but that'll come back over time. And he came on to play on the wing, Tom. Further forward on the wing. If we see that from Tarik Lamptey, wearing number two, by the way, that would be fantastic. Imagine a winger wearing number two. Couldn't get better. Yeah, it's just incredible. Like, he's just such a lovely guy as well. Like, all the interviews you see of him and the fact of how he's stuck around with us when he's had opportunities to leave on loan, but he wants to stay, he wants to get fit, he wants to fight for his place and play for this football club. And it's so wholesome and beautiful and exactly what you expect from Tarik Lamptey. So, yeah, couldn't be happier.
It's like Dagan said, why on earth would you want to leave? I mean, this football club, this coach, the trajectory we're on is just wonderful. And Dagan, I mean, Tarik Lamptey almost got himself an assist. You know, he picks the ball up, drives into the Newcastle box and puts a lovely cross in. And if it wasn't for Kieran Trippier getting a touch, Mitoma would have buried that to make it 4-1 at the time. But no, a really exciting cameo from young Tarik.
Well, I mean, the run itself was what was exhilarating, right? The ball played into space that looked impossibly far ahead of him, and he ran onto it in stride. It was sort of, you know, the perfect vision of what he can be at his, you know, at his very ideal, which is just faster than everybody else on the pitch, and able to run onto a ball in space that you couldn't imagine. And what I hope we can see is both the ability to run onto a ball like that, as well as track back and be a defender. You know, I know you often tout that he's not a pure right back, but, you know, in our system, being able to slide into the midfield. And I think the possibilities of how De Zerbi could deploy him are varied. And perhaps we haven't seen, you know, the tip of the iceberg in terms of the variety of what De Zerbi might do and how he might deploy his players. And my question earlier about Mitoma, as we envision, you know, how do we get Evan Ferguson and João Pedro and Solly March and Mitoma and Ansu Fati all in the field at the same time? Do we put Mitoma at right back, dare I say, and have him teaming up with Solly March and filling into the midfield and creating from that space and going on, you know, electric runs? But again, I leave that up to the manager, but what exciting possibilities that we have. And when you add Lamptey as another just electric player on the pitch, it's exciting, right? I mean, you know, we have these old, you know, wily veterans. And I think when they're dispersed around the pitch with guys with this kind of electricity and speed, it's, you know, it gives us some patience and stability where we need it. But that electricity to just hit the gas and go by people, it's fun to watch at the very least. And I think that's why people I'm bumping into here in the States that, you know, before we're like, what's BHAFC stand for? Now are asking me, oh my gosh, you're a Brighton fan? I've never met a Brighton fan in person before. That's so cool. Is that Mitoma on the back of your shirt? Like, they have conversations and excitement. And the thing that they leave with is, you guys really play a beautiful brand of football. And it's exciting to be a part of.
I was just going to say, Tom, could you imagine us talking about all of these attacking options when we were so, like, hell-bent on signing a striker with only Neil Maupay and Danny Welbeck to call upon? And we were like, what are we going to do? And we're having to have Leandro Trossard fill in there. And that wasn't the ideal option. And now Dagan's just reeled off all those names. And I'm sat here absolutely mind blown that we've got to find a way to fit all these guys in. It's just
heavy.
And heavy hikes. So back in January.
Well, I think it goes to show, and there's no way I can say this without becoming Costa's quite, pardon the profanity, a bit bitchy, but maybe it just turned out that we didn't have the right coach to play that way. sorry, Graham. You did get us to finish top 10, so thank you. But yeah, Tarik Lamptey coming back. It's worth remembering that Bayern Munich were interested in him not that long ago. If there is one coach that is going to get the best out of him, if he can stay fit, it's Roberto De Zerbi. Really exciting cameo. I really hope that he stays fit this season. Got everything crossed. Before we talk about the post-match stuff, Curtis, I suppose we have to talk about the inevitability that is Callum Wilson. Unfortunately, Brighton didn't get their first clean sheet of the season. Van Hecker played Wilson inside, who reduces the arrears slightly. Frustrating as we were on course to get our first clean sheet of the season, as I say. Just a quick word on that, if you don't mind. And should it in any way affect how people see Van Hecker's performance? Because he put in a fantastic performance.
Listen, the grass is green, the sky is blue sometimes, and Callum Wilson scores goals against us. It just seems to happen all the time. It was frustrating, obviously, because, as you say, it's been a little bit since we've had a clean sheet. I suppose that's, you know, what happens when you play the brand of football. You have to sort of sacrifice some things like that. But I don't think it should affect how people look at Van Hecker or how he played, because I still think he was outstanding yesterday. And if he doesn't start the next game, which I think he should, that will be an absolute travesty. But don't let the fact that just one goal go in distract you from the fact that that was an incredible game yesterday from us, and we should be immensely proud, and everyone on the pitch should be immensely proud.
Very well said, Curtis. Very well said. It really was, a pitch filled with 9 and 10 out of 10 performances. And I asked the question because, unfortunately, there will always be people that are like, oh, Van Hecker, blah, blah, blah. But he was monumental yesterday. And I fully agree. He needs to start against Manchester United after the international break. So that leads us very nicely then, guys, talking about these fantastic performances, to asking you guys who your player of the match was. Don't forget to let us know your thoughts in the comments section down below if you're watching on YouTube. But before we get onto anything else, Joe, who was your player of the match, please?
Well, it's funny. It's a really funny question whenever there's a hat-trick scored. Well, there's not a hat-trick scored often, and we don't talk about hat-tricks often on the Albion Obsessed podcast.
Okay, I've got a thing then. If you're going to say Ferguson, you've got to give me one other person. As an honourable
right,
mention.
So can we all agree that Evan Ferguson deserves it because he scored the hat-trick? So the award should go to him. So let's talk about a player of the match award that isn't Evan Ferguson.
This is our runner-up. This is our runner-up for man of the match. That's
exactly.
Fair. Do we all agree?
Joint first.
I mean, Evan Ferguson was brilliant, but I don't know. It's really hard because you're right, Joe. You've got to give it to Evan Ferguson. But I want to give it to someone else.
You want to give it to Billy Gilmore. I know you do.
Oh, I want to give it to Billy. Of course I want to give it to Billy Gilmore.
This reminds me.
Utterly ridiculous.
It reminds me of the end of season awards when we're all like, oh, yes. Dunk should get
Billy
players.
William Clifford Gilmore, ladies and gentlemen, is my player of the match. He was incredible. He had... got an assist. He was instrumental in the first goal, played a part in the third goal as well. He was a midfield magician, not in the sense of Anthony Knockhart, not in the sense of, you know, other Mitoma-esque sort of players, but he was so good. His passing, he was, you know, his tackling, his covering was just so, so, so good. Of course, I've got to give it to Evan because he scored a blooming hat trick. But I want to give it to Billy Gilmore because I bloody love Billy Gilmore. He's like becoming one of my favourite players. I like him so much. He's getting a lot of media attention at the moment. He seems to be getting a lot of post-match interviews. I think he talks very well. So, Billy Gilmore.
I mean, if we had three different goal scorers, it's Billy Gilmore, right?
Can I take this opportunity to give shout-outs to maybe guys that we haven't spoken about overly much? I spoke about it at the top of the show when you were talking about the starting lineup. João Pedro, his work rate deeper than the role he would like to play or is more expected to play. I thought his defensive work rate was fantastic and it filled in the midfield roles when we really needed him, because it was clear to see that Eddie Howe had set up to completely overrun our midfield and it didn't work. I think there was a lot of concerns that would happen with a midfield two of Gross and Gilmore. But it didn't happen, and it was fantastic to see. And I think a lot of credit has got to go to João Pedro for that. Joel Veltman, you spoke about what does Milner give us going forwards above Joel Veltman. But I thought going forwards yesterday, Joel Veltman was absolutely fantastic. The recoveries from poor clearances from Newcastle players, where he would pick the ball up, sweep it up and get us on the attack again, was absolutely fantastic. But my player of the match award, other than Evan Ferguson, goes to JP Van Hecker. I thought he was absolutely flawless, and I'm not going to think about the Wilson goal, but I thought he was absolutely fantastic and one of our most important players yesterday to break up so many dangerous Newcastle attacks, which would have absolutely floored us. And it was because of him that those didn't happen. So for me, it has to go to Van Hecker.
That's fair. I also want to give a shout out to someone who was quietly brilliant, and that was Pascal Gross. Really, really, really good performance from Pascal in the midfield.
And can we just say as well, because we didn't mention on the last podcast, Pascal, congratulations on your Germany call-up. I don't think it happened before on our last podcast, but...
Yeah, richly deserved. Richly
my
deserved.
Word. My word. So happy for him to play for Germany. It's been years in the making, and I hope he goes and enjoys it. He's going to play against Mitoma as well, which is quite funny.
And so congrats to Lewis Dunk as well for getting another chance back in the squad, rightly so.
It's a shame Solly didn't get called up, but Dunkey in the England squad, amazing stuff.
Curtis, what about David? You? I'm going to go first. I'm going to hold for last.
Oh, okay. If there's a way that I could have Billy Van Hecker as my winner, I would do that. But I can't split them in half, unfortunately. That would be weird.
Be some sort of physics, like Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I got it in there. I got the reference in.
Whoa, 10 points for Joe. Not Joe, Tom, that's you. Okay. I have a real affinity for midfielders, right? I thought Billy Gilmore was outstanding yesterday, but I'm going to have to echo Joe here and say Van Heck. He was so fantastic yesterday, because I admittedly I was a little worried, because the last time we saw him against a really good opposition, that was Man City, he played really, really well in that game. And I thought maybe he's one of these players that just does really well against these big teams. So I was hopeful, and he was just so outstanding. And my brother, again, was sat next to me during the game, and he was like, "That Van Hecker guy, he's outstanding. He's really, really good for you." And I was like, "Yeah, God." And as my brother said, like, so many of your players played so well. It's going to be really difficult for you to, like, talk about this with your mates. So for him, it's going to have to be him, but it could be like three or four different players. And isn't that amazing that we're struggling to choose our man of the match?
It is. And it shows you how well the team played. But Dagan, you got your wish. You can go last.
All right. Thanks. Evan, right, we all agreed, terrific, hat trick. And it's interesting that there's a V in Evan's fine name, so it's the second letter. But we have a trio of Vs on our squad. And I did a little research yesterday, and there's a history of Dutch trios. AC Milan featured a Dutch trio that was often called the Dutch Trio, but was also called the Three Musketeers. And we don't have the Three Musketeers, though there are three of them, and we can't make the same version of another thing. But we do have the V Musketeers in Veltman, Van Hecke, and Verbruggen. So I'm gonna give my man of the match to the V Musketeers for preventing goals. Though I will say, as close as Van Hecke was to perfect, that slip up was noticeable. And I think it's the kind of thing that a young player does. It's similar to Colwell's mistakes last year, where he just didn't hold that line tight with Dunk. Dunk had pressed forward, and Van Hecke was just, you know, probably basking in the glow of the rest of the game and the game that he had played, deservedly so perhaps. Gave up a cheap one, which is unfortunate. But no, I thought all three of those guys were terrific, and those were all changes. I guess Verbruggen had played in the previous game against West Ham, but didn't have a chance to make saves and plays because he was beaten by one-on-one attempts where he had, you know, little to no chance. And the one chance at the end of the game that he had to make a stop, he made it. But he did make that key save off the deflection and a few other nice plays in this game. Though Curtis, as you said, he was a little bit relaxed, but Evan was tremendous. He, you know, he deserves a man of the match. Can the official record, if we keep score of these things, should reflect, I think, that Evan is man of the match. But it was fun to talk about those other guys who deserved accolades, because there certainly were many. And again, we scored first, and that is not to be underestimated as an important factor. And I think, you know, to you guys choosing Van Hecke, had it not been for his individual effort and recovery on that first Isak chance, where it looked all but sure that he was going to score, we may have been down 1-0 and maybe facing the same kind of fate that we did last week. So I can certainly understand how folks would choose him, but I'm gonna choose the group in aggregate. The Musketeers, make it happen, fans.
It's a thing. It's going to be a thing. Yeah, some very big performances for that victory there. And let us know yours in the comments section down below. Who stood out to you? Now, before we sign off for the evening, we've got to look ahead to post international break. We go away to Manchester United. But before we just talk about our score predictions for that, it is worth noting, guys, that our next home game is a Europa League game against AEK Athens. And that in and of itself, as I said at the top of the show, is truly wonderful. And it has been a long time coming. This club have gone through the ringer. I'm not going to do the history lesson, but it's richly deserved. And it is really exciting.
Cry, you coward.
I've cried many times over Brighton and over Albion. I'm not scared to admit it. But no, the fact that our next home game is a Europa League game is really exciting. But our next actual game is against a team that lost today 3-1. I think the final score was, conceding twice later on. Manchester United, who lost to Arsenal today. Recently, Joe, Brighton have had quite a lot of joy against Manchester United. And this is a Manchester United side that seemed to be in a bit of turmoil, similar to how they were last time we played them at Old Trafford. What do you think the score will be as we take as you're actually going to Old Trafford? So what do you think the score will be as you watch Roberto De Zerbi play against Ten Hag's Manchester United?
Well, I think it's going to be a very, very good game. I think we're going to come away from Manchester very, very happy. They look absolutely atrocious and have done all season. I think they were lucky to beat Nottingham Forest last week. I think it was last week they played them. And yeah, they've just looked completely out of sorts. Don't know what's going on with them. When Garnacho's goal was ruled out today after they went 2-1 up, I said Arsenal have the opportunity to do one of the funniest things in the season so far, and they bloody did it. So thank you, Declan Rice. It made me very, very happy. But yeah, I can't wait to go there. I think it's going to be a great day. And I think we're going to run out 2-0 winners, Tom.
Very nice indeed. Dagan, you know, Joe's already sort of alluded to it. Manchester United been very underperforming this year. They were lucky to get the win against Wolves. Obviously, the late controversial penalty there. So you can pretty much guarantee there's going to be some controversial decision given against us because it's Old Trafford. But football, 11 versus 11 on the pitch. You confident we can go there and win?
I'm very confident we can go there and win. Would like to score first, would not like to be the position Arsenal was in where we let, you know, a goal go completely against the run of play. And, you know, Rashford hit a screamer today. That's obviously the fear. But I feel like if we do score first, we could really open them up, to be perfectly candid. And so I'm gonna go with that and predict a 3-1 win our way.
Oh, I like that. High scoring. It is what Brighton do. I think it was 8 out of the last 10 games that we've played under Roberto Zerbe, we've scored like 3 or more goals. It's quite ridiculous, really.
Yeah, we're averaging 3 goals, leading the league right now. Yeah. Leading the Premier League.
Curtis, do you share Joe and Dagan's optimism? Are Brighton going to continue their happy hunting at Old Trafford?
Yeah, I mean, Manchester United haven't been a team I've been concerned about for years since we've been playing them. Like we always seem to do really, really well against them. Usually Gross is guaranteed a goal in that fixture. So, I do see them scoring because I just do. But I still think like a 3-1 victory for us. I can just picture that quite comfortably, really. I at the moment, I can't see where they're going to trouble us. So,
what about you then, Thomas? What do you reckon?
I did the whole mind-blown thing when Curtis was saying about Manchester United haven't troubled me, as in him, for years. And I'm the same, which seems so strange to say. A team that has been so massive when I was a kid and are still massive in their own right anyway. But yeah, I agree. It's not a game I'm overly sort of concerned about. Obviously, Manchester United can hurt us. They've got pace. You know, Rashford has done us for pace a couple of times, but the last couple of times we've played them, we've marshalled them very, very well. I do think Ten Hag is a bit overrated as a coach. I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I just don't think he's perhaps like upper echelons of coach. That's just my personal opinion. I can see this being a high scoring game if the Brighton of yesterday turn up. So I'm going to go with 4-2. Because I think they could hit us on the counter. They've got the ability to score. Our defence has yet to keep a clean sheet. But the reality is, I think we're just going to have too much going forward for them, which is, you know, we have the thing is that's the thing.
Ansu Fati.
They finished the game today with Johnny Evans and Harry Maguire at the back.
Yeah, and they wondered why they conceded 2 goals.
In De Zerbi's words, football heritage.
I mean, it is worth noting, of course, this is a Manchester United side that not too dissimilar to the side that held us 0-0 at Wembley and then went on to penalties. And also we beat by a singular goal in the last minute last season. So they can be cagey, they can be tight, they can be hard to beat. But the statistics tell me that Brighton are going to just do what they do. They're going to pour forward. And hopefully we will score. But by pouring forward, it does mean that we are likely to concede. So I'm going to go with the maths on this one. So I'm going to go 4-2 to Brighton and Hove Albion. And that's what I'm going to do. Let us know your score predictions in the comments section down below. International break now. As we've said, a lot of the Brighton players are indeed on internationals, including Karim Mitoma, Pascal Gross finally getting his call up to the Germany side, well warranted. And of course, our very own Lewis Dunk being part of the England squad, something that we've all been clamouring for years. So keep an eye on the Albion lads that are playing for their national teams. A big well done to those players. We're all incredibly proud of you. Go and represent your teams and your nations with pride. So all that's left to say is don't forget to like, share and subscribe. More content, if you haven't done so already, let us know your thoughts in the comment section down below about all the things. Check out One Klopp Shop, and we'll see you next time, wherever you may be, whenever you may be. Take it easy. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye now.